the bit.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Hello, this is Patricia Quinn on Sci-Fi and Scream, like Elizabeth Bott and Just Williams. Scream and Scream and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound.
Look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Superman.
And this is Sci-Fi and Scream. Welcome to the show. This is Sonia on Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. And also, welcome, Andy Hawken is in the studio as well.
Hi,
welcome,
Sonia. Andy. How are you?
It's good to have you here.
And good to be here.
It's a bit of an awesome event, I think.
Oh, it's
it's
super.
Overwhelming.
Yes.
It is super. It is Superman. Super. So, yeah, we're going to do our best in the time we have, the limited time, to discuss the origins of Superman, of course, and the, all leading up to the big penultimate, you know, the Man of Steel, or
That's
Man
right.
of Steel,
yes,
which we saw yesterday evening,
That's right.
of course, thanks to Roadshow Australia. So we'll be chatting about that a bit later on in the show. And also we'll have a little bit of sci-fi and squeamish news, just a tad, an announcement there. And just want to say thanks to the guys from Catching Up. Jamie and Brett, without Dolly by their side, and that was their actually last show, but we hope to have them around the studio and the station in the future. Great show. It's been wonderful hanging out with them. You know, preliminary to our show every Tuesday night when they were on at 9 p.m. So we wish them all the best and always love their music, especially those extended mixes of Dolly's. So excellent guys and good luck with whatever you do in the future. Love it. All right, so here we are. It looks Sci-Fi and Scream. We've got Terrence Lee in the background with some of his video influenced music. But we're going to talk Superman, of course, and the first track we did have as well was Laurie Anderson's, the very famous Oh Superman. I don't know if it's got much actual real reference or relevance to Superman, but it's a classic, I guess you'd call it experimental pop from the 80s. And if you have a favourite Superman or you want to just chat about Superman to us this evening, you sure can. You can SMS us on 0427 Joy 949, phone on 1300 Joy 949, and even email onair@joy.org.au. Now, Jerry isn't here this evening. He is the incredible shrinking or disappearing man. That's his outfit. So he's in his invisibility realm right now.
Okay,
but hey, let's start off with Andy and the origins of Superman. I know we've talked about it on the show back many, many moons ago.
Many moons, yeah.
But not from your perspective as a DC, would I say freak or big fan?
Yeah, obsessive. You know.
Obsessive, that obsessive. Sounds nicer.
Yeah, that's what I think.
All right, Andy, what can you tell us about the origins of Superman? It's a big one.
Well, Superman as a character in the comic books has been around for 75 years.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, happy 75th birthday, Superman.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And, you know, in that time he's been through a lot of different incarnations and team-ups with, you know, teams like the Justice League and things like that. But, yeah, he started back in 1933 as an idea in Jerry and Joe's head and eventually saw the light of comic book pages in 1938.
Yeah. So we're talking the writer, obviously, Jerry Siegel, and
yes, the artist,
his cohort, artist Joe Shuster.
That's right.
But they were high school friends in Ohio, so it was a wonderful thing, if you think about it, coming up with this idea. And we were talking the Depression era in the US,
that's
and right around the world, of course, it was occurring. And I believe they sold the idea to Detective Comics, also that later on became DC.
That's
in 1938.
Yeah, it was a $130 sale altogether.
For the whole concept.
For the whole thing, all the rights to the character. And, you know, they just got sort of swept away after, you know, the rights were sold. And they
$130 was probably a good sum back then.
A lot of money, yeah, I would say.
That's amazing for guys that are so young and,
that's right,
you know, doing something like that. And it first appeared, and if people don't know this already, Action Comics number one back in June 38, and became part of a radio serial, TV programs, films, comic strips and newspapers, even video games. Mm. And, I mean, it's iconic. You can't look past the S.
That's right.
On the chest.
Which is
symbol.
Not, as we know, is not an S. It means hope on the planet Krypton.
Okay.
From last night's movie, if you were paying attention.
We will have spoilers on the show this evening. Yes, all right, so you've mentioned that the letter S, as we see it as humans.
We see it as Earthlings. Mm-hmm. We see it as S.
Earthlings. But on Krypton,
it's actually the sign of the House of El, which represents hope.
Okay. Mm. No, I learn something every day. It's been such a long time since I flicked through a Superman comic back, of course. Mm. And I have to say, on that sort of nostalgic note for myself, it was the first comic I probably ever picked up.
Oh, wow. That means a lot. Mine was Batman, but, you know, we're not talking about Batman tonight.
No, not really. Maybe a little bit of Batman coming in later, though.
Yes, yes.
Especially when we're looking at Man of Steel, the movie that's, you know, due to come out this Thursday, the 27th, here throughout Australia. It's already been released in the States.
Yeah.
And is doing incredibly well, but we will chat about that, of course, later on. Superman's other name, of course, is
Kal-El.
Kal-El. K-A-L.
E-L. Yep.
That's it.
As he's known on Krypton.
Rocketed to Earth as an infant little baby, his scientist father, Jor-El, moments before the destruction of the planet that was doomed, it seems, and discovered and adopted by a Kansas farmer and his wife, and became raised as someone called Clark Kent.
Clark Kent, that's right.
I mean, if you Google Clark Kent, you probably get 50 million... links to Clark Kent.
Doesn't get any more American than that.
No. I wonder how many people were born after 1940 or so and were called Clark.
I know.
In honour.
Exactly.
Probably still are. Look, of course, famous has been a journalist for Metropolis, which is based loosely on Manhattan, of course.
That's
New York City.
New York City, of course.
Yeah. And what else can you tell us about the origins, the origin myth of Superman, Andy?
Oh, well, there are, you know, the obvious Jewish connections. There's the, parallel to Moses or Jesus, like one man to save them all and things like that. And apparently the red cape that Superman wears is supposedly linked to the cloth or the blanket that Moses was wrapped in when he was a child and sent down the river.
Because Schuster and Siegel, of course, were Jewish from immigrant origins.
That's right.
And it's quite interesting. Warner Brothers have been releasing this big Superman film, Man of Steel, but of course the origins, it seems to reflect a lot of Jewish aspects, including the red and blue costume, I believe, and that type of thing. According to Jerry Siegel, he acknowledged in an unpublished memoir that he was strongly influenced by anti-Semitism in the 1930s.
Oh, yeah.
So that sort of pushed him along to decide he needed to create a kind of Samson character from the Old Testament, but create the Samson character who could be a role model for young Jewish people growing up in New York. Wow. In other parts of
Cleveland,
America. Cleveland. Mm. And it was 70% Jewish in the neighbourhood he grew up in, in Schuster.
Okay.
So, it is interesting. It has that, I think, symbolicness there.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's never really part of...
he doesn't fit in.
...the culture, but yet he wants to assimilate, which is very similar to the Jewish experience in the US,
I believe.
Right.
Yeah.
Culturally,
it is, yeah. It's like a leader for all of us outsiders.
Yes, it seems to have developed in that way.
It does.
And even recently, I believe, a lot of LGBTIQ advocates have been publishing in Huffington Post online, huffington.com. It actually showed that some gay rights groups have taken up the mantle of his, so to speak, of the Man of Steel, and saying it's a similar story, the Superman story, to a young male who might be in the closet.
That's
and
right.
feeling, you know, that to be quite a difficult experience. So,
as Jonathan Kent, his father says to adoptive father says to him, you can't let the rest of the world know who you really are, because people fear what they don't understand.
And
that goes along the lines of, you know, a lot of the experiences that, you know, we've had as rainbow people.
Rainbow people.
Rainbow people.
Rainbow zombie unicorns.
Right, exactly. There you go.
Look, this is Sci-Fi and Squeam, and you're listening here on Joy 94.9 as we do the Superman thing. And we're not wearing Superman tights.
No, I'm not wearing my jocks on the outside either.
No red undies here.
No.
Stay tuned. This is Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy.
Hi, this is Tom O'Panikid, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
You're not going to shoot those little creatures. In the first place, they haven't done you any harm. In the second place, they may be radioactive. If they fall in the reservoir, they may contaminate the water supply.
And we can't have that. This is Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9. Leave the little mole people alone, the mole men.
That was
from 1951 with the amazing George Reeves. I believe it was the beginning, just before the TV series really flew.
Yeah, it was kind of like a movie-length TV episode, sort of a prequel to set up the TV series.
Cool. And this is Sonia here on Sci-Fi and Squeam with Andy.
Yes.
Welcome again, Andy.
Thank you. I'm really glad to be here.
So am I.
Great.
You're a man of steel yourself, a lifesaver. And, Gail Simone, we had a little bit of a tag there with her. Very famous, of course, for doing many things.
Oh, yes.
Batwoman is one of them.
Batwoman. She's done Birds of Prey, which is like Black Canary and Batgirl. She's just started Red Sonja Unchained, which is...
Ooh, that's exciting.
That's very, very exciting.
My namesake.
Yeah.
I was named after Red Sonja.
Is that right?
Wow.
Do you wear chainmail bikinis just like Red Sonja?
No comment.
Oh,
this is a family show.
We'll have to leave that for another show.
Okay. Yeah, no worries, Andy.
Good.
Cool. Now, of course, who else could we have played but Eminem?
That's right.
Superman. Mm. That was the radio edit friendly version, naturally. It's as friendly as it gets here on Sci-Fi and Squeam. Speaking of friendly, we've had a message from Lawrence in Frankston. Frankston, Australia, which is just awesome. He goes, wow, thanks so much, guys. So much that I didn't know about Superman and the guys that created him. Really interesting.
Cool.
Thank you, and thanks for listening, Lawrence.
Thank you, Lawrence.
We do appreciate that. We love Frankston. Now, wherever you are in the world, Melbourne, anywhere, Williamstown even, my new place of abode my secret identity.
Yeah, Reservoir.
Or Reservoir even. Yeah. Why do you say that? Look, SMS us with your favourite Superman movie. Is it Superman the movie? Mm. Is it...
Superman the Quest for Peace, number 4.
Oh, there's a few. Andy knows all about that. We'll go through the list in a moment.
Yeah.
So 0427JOY949 is how you can contact us. You can phone as well on 1300JOY949 and email onair@joy.org.au. But now, Andy, there will be a drum roll, perhaps, maybe just in my mind, but Superman, a 75-year comic book history. You go there.
That's right. Thanks. I've just tried to, you know, break it down into, the most important events in Superman's comic book career. So start off with, as we know, I mentioned before, Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, who are the writer and the artist who created Superman, was first created in 1933. And the first story featuring Superman was actually written in 1934, and it's the one that eventually appeared in Action Comics number 1. So, about 5 years prior. And then at the beginning of the Golden Age of Comics in 1938, Siegel and Shuster sold that first Superman story for $10 a page. And all the rights to the character to DC Comics for $130.
Oh, right, like you mentioned. Mm-hmm. Seems like not a lot of money, but back
in 1933,
it was,
Depression. Yeah. And although the cover date on that comic was June, it was on the 18th of April that year that Action Comics number 1 was published. And within that first issue, Superman/ Clark Kent and Lois Lane were introduced as newspaper reporters at the Daily Star. 200,000 copies of that were printed on the first run, and they were 10 cents each.
Wow.
Whereas now you're looking at about $4 or $5 for a Superman comic. Mm. Six issues later, number 7 was selling 500,000 copies, and this sudden success saw artist Joe Shuster hiring art assistants to cope with the demand. On January the 16th, 1939, a Superman newspaper comic strip began, which included the first use of the name Krypton, along with the names Jor-El and Laura, Superman's biological parents.
Right.
And then in the summer of 1939, Superman number 1 was published, and he became the first superhero to have his own comic book title. And included in that issue was a new 2-page origin story and the first mention of Krypton in the comics. Later that year, Action Comics number 16 identified Superman's hometown as Metropolis. In 1940, Action Comics 23 first introduces Superman's arch nemesis, the criminal scientist Lex Luthor, who we all know and love, some of us.
Smallville, I mean.
Smallville.
He probably was the most dominant villain, I think, in that whole series.
He was, and, you know, he was childhood friends with Clark Kent, so, you know, growing up with your arch nemesis. And then the newspaper that Clark and Lois work at gets renamed The Daily Planet in Superman number 4 later that year. And then Perry White comes along in Superman number 7. 1945 saw the end of the Golden Age of comics, and in 47, the second year of the post-Golden Age, Superman first manages to fly at super speed in Superman 48.
Right.
In
well, it's amazing. So he only just started flying then.
Basically 9 years after he was first published.
So he just lifted cars and
caught
ladies occasionally.
That's right, falling
from
off buildings.
Falling buildings, exactly. Yeah. Well, not falling buildings, falling from buildings. Okay. All right.
And then in 1948, within the pages of Superman 53, which is the 10th anniversary issue of Superman, a more detailed origin story was told, including the cause of Krypton's destruction. And then in 1949, we saw the first use of the name Fortress of Solitude. And within that book was also introduced Green Kryptonite, the glowing radioactive remains of the planet Krypton that are deadly to Superman.
Gosh, it does remind me of the Green Lantern a little bit when you say that.
Yeah.
And the O, what is owed to the development of Superman as a superhero, the first one, would it be not the first one, or?
Well, it's funny you say that. There's a little bit of a reference to Oa and the Green Lantern Corps later down in Superman's career. So,
okay,
yeah,
cool.
But then 9 years later, in 1958, the second year of the Silver Age, the concept of the Fortress of Solitude as a structure within the Arctic was mentioned. The fortress contains the bottled city of Kandor, a phantom zone viewer and projector, trophy room, laboratory, communication centre, personal diary, robots to impersonate Superman, and Kryptonian archives and memorials.
Goodness, a very elaborate sort of lair, reminding me a bit of Batman.
It's very much, very much Batcave.
This is pre-Batcave, though, yeah?
Batman was still around.
Yep.
Yep.
But what was it saying? This is 1958 at that point.
This is 58, yeah.
Oh, okay. Look, I'm going to play something now. I just can't resist.
No worries.
Just for you.
Oh,
it's a little bit of Jor-El, our friend Jor-El and Zod.
Oh, yeah.
I think they're going a bit head-to-head here. Let's find out. This is Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9.
This is no fantasy. No careless product of wild imagination. No, my good friends. These are matters of undeniable fact. I ask you now to pronounce judgment on those accused. This mindless aberration, whose only means of expression are wanton violence and destruction.
Join us! You will bow down before me, Jor-El! I swear it! No matter that it takes an eternity, you will bow down before me! Both you, and then one day, your heirs!
Hi, this is Eric Vail, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam on 94.9.
Hi, this is Vegeta, Prince of All Saiyans, voiced by Christopher Sabat. You're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam on 94.9, your home for all the things you like and stuff.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
Something a bit different there. That was from the Superman the movie, 1978. Obviously, you heard Jor-El, who was played by
Terrence
the wonderful...
Stamp.
Marlon Brando, Zod, played by the
Zod
amazing LGBTIQ icon, Terrence Stamp, of course.
Right.
More famous to us, I guess, from Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. But anyway, that's a bit of a digression. And Chris Sabat, of course, there too. They were very heavily influenced by superhero comics and so forth, and do the voices, of course, for various comic animated characters.
Oh, yeah.
And they were at Oz Comic Con.
Oh, nice.
Of course, that was around last year with Mr. Marvel himself, Stan Lee. But getting back to the DC Comics, just to fast forward a bit there, Andy.
Yeah, sure.
Here on Sci-Fi and Squeam.
No problem. Let's come forward about 30 years to 1997.
Cool.
That was the first formation of the Justice League of America, when Superman got on board with Batman, Wonder Woman, Flash, Aquaman, Green Lantern and Martian Manhunter.
Ooh.
And, you know, the Justice League took off from there. And then, interestingly, in 2001, Lex Luthor became the President of the United States. And all in that time discovered that Superman was actually Clark Kent. But luckily for Superman, Lex's memory gets wiped and, you know, he doesn't have to worry about that anymore. And then in 2011, Superman walked across the United States trying to decide whether or not the world really needs a Superman.
Or the United States, anyway.
Yeah, that's right. Well, according to the United States, yeah.
It's as far as they got.
And then later in 2011, August and September, the entire DC universe of comic books gets relaunched to make way for a whole new series of number one, commonly known as the New 52. And then during the month of June 2013, which is right now, right here, the 75th anniversary of Superman's being celebrated with two brand new number one comic book titles.
Mm-hmm.
It's Batman and Superman Team Up, number one, and Superman Unchained. And as we know, on the 27th of June, the latest Superman movie, Man of Steel, is due for theatrical release in Australia. And here's to the next 75 years of everyone's favourite Kryptonian.
That's his opinion.
That's my opinion.
Andy. Thanks, Andy. Look, that was cool. I'm just looking at the Superman logo. I mean, it is so instantly recognisable, as I mentioned.
Yeah.
And you can see it everywhere in advertisements and so forth. But apparently it didn't start that way as far as popularity goes. It is so important now and basically protecting or making sustainable its actual character, because it does have a character of its own, and it has been the icon for over 70 years, of course 75. But back in the day, there was no such thing as, before Superman, there was no such thing as a superhero nor a superhero costume.
That's right.
So this was a totally whole new experience. So the original superhero and those symbols, of course, there was no such thing as Batman or the Human Torch, no Captain America even, or Captain Marvel, Shazam as he's also known. Now, you know, there was nothing like that until Superman.
Yep.
And I believe in 1945, National Periodic Publications, which also is the other name for DC Comics, they actually trademarked the Superman symbol, which means it gives them that ability to print the stories in perpetuity, and which is also means that it's very unlikely that it'll become public domain even now after 75 years. It was the norm at the time, but not for this particular symbol. So the ability to license and merchandise the character created another source of income for the comics industry, and I would say, massively huge, bigger than Marilyn Monroe, perhaps. All of that, of course, has to go to Siegel and Schuster, particularly Schuster, for coming up with those interesting designs and symbols. And it's metamorphosized so many times. And you can head to our Facebook page to check out some of those metamorphosisms if you wish to, certainly.
And speaking of Siegel and Schuster, it took until 1978, the release of the first Superman movie with Christopher Reeve, for Jerry and Joe to get any recognition.
Really?
Yeah,
because it's amazing.
All the writers and artists at DC just pressured DC Comics to actually credit, you know, Superman created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Schuster. It took them nearly 40 years. But as we know, they sold all the rights for $130 back in the day. So.
That's hard, isn't it?
That's really harsh.
Well, interesting facts about Joe Schuster, the artist known as the artist for the comic book of Superman, first published Action Comics number one in 1938. We talk about a lot of legal battles to do with the ownership of that character, of course, which basically sent him virtually broke, I believe, and he fell upon difficult, hard times. And during those times, after the creation of Superman in the early 50s, he did actually publish some particular works that might be of interest to some of our late night listeners, and that is Fetish, or Knights of Horror, called Fetish Art, some of which was all very under the counter, shush, shush, or hush, hush, and later on banned by the US Senate. It was believed it created juvenile delinquency, and some of the artwork is quite extraordinary. It's very fetish. There's bondage. There's Superman-looking male figures tying up and dominating females that look just like Lois Lane. It's coincidental. Yeah. And also role reversal, a lot of role reversal and fetish and bondage outfits. Ooh. So if you want to find out more about that, look up Secret Identity, the fetish art of Superman's co-creator Joe Shuster. We'll put some of that on our Facebook. So it's called Nights of Horror, but maybe for some Nights of Pleasure, perhaps. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So this is Sci-Fi and Scream. It's a little bit different. Now up next, let's look at some of the music that we probably know quite well. Most famously would be the Superman intro, I think, that John Williams, conducted and composed for the 78 film, which has been playing tonight at the Astor.
It has, yeah.
At the cinema here in Melbourne, so that's very exciting. Margot Kidder was supposed to appear to introduce the film, but unfortunately, dear Margot has become ill, and we do hope here on Sci-Fi and Scream she recovers as soon as possible.
That's right. Get well, Lois Lane.
Get well. Please, Lois Lane. We love you.
We do.
This is Sci-Fi and Scream doing Superman things. Superhuman powers. Whatever. Here on Joy and 94.9.
I'm John O'Jarrett, Geeks Out from the United States of America sends much love to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9, the best LGBTQ radio show in all of Australia.
Hello, this is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. Yes, indeed. Thanks to the Geeks Out guys, John O'Jarrett and Patrick Yacko. They've been great supporters for the show in the past, and we love them, Geeks Out. Head to their Facebook page and check them out, because they're all about advocacy and support for LGBTI geeks and their friends, and how to make this a geeky world a better world, and they love their comics too, so it's just awesome. And in the studio here is myself, Sonia, with, of course, the indestructible Andy Hawken.
Yes.
Just say yes.
Yes.
And now, if you have a Superman favourite or something you want to chat about to do with the Man of Steel, please let us know. SMS us on 0427 Joy949, phone 1300 Joy949, or email onair@joy.org.au. And this episode will be podcasted, of course, on the Joy website, which is joy.org.au, in a week's time, or hopefully even less. Let's hope so, because the big one's coming up, Man of Steel, our review in a little while's time. But firstly, television, Superman and television. I mean, it's a big topic.
It's huge.
We won't have much time to do it, but it probably starts with Mr. George Reeves,
it does,
I think.
Yeah.
The TV Superman from, coincidentally, June 1951.
I know, June's the month.
It's funny, isn't it?
It's very funny.
It is.
Well, June 1938 was the first Action Comics number one, so it's kind of like the first appearance of Superman ever anywhere. So.
Well, it is their spring to summer, is it?
It's so, their summer, yeah,
so
middle of summer.
Maybe with the releases that they have, I guess. I'm just guessing.
Could be.
But, of course, George Kiefer Brewer, as he was actually born and known as back in 1914, was the American actor most well-known, I believe, for the Superman character in the 50s on TV, The Adventures of Superman.
That's right.
He died mysteriously at the age of 45 from a gunshot wound, which is a very polarising issue, and officially it was decided it was suicide, but there are some that believe there's more to it than that. But hey, we're not going to go into that topic, I don't think. The curse of Superman, there is all that conspiracy stuff, and hey, look,
they did make that movie, Hollywoodland, all about the controversy.
With Ben Affleck.
Ben Affleck playing George Reeves. That's
It's an interesting film, though. Mm. Not much Superman in it, but anyway.
No,
Look, he was reluctant to take the role initially, it's believed, The Adventures of Superman, because he didn't consider TV to be so important. I mean, look at TV now.
I know,
especially cable, HBO and so on.
Yeah.
And the first part of it was there were half-hour films that were shot on very tight schedules, and there were two shows made every 6 days. That's an incredible turnout.
Wow, yeah.
But anyway, Superman and the Mole Man, we played a bit of that earlier, was originally intended as a B picture, but became the pilot for The Adventures of Superman. It's a TV series, so that's interesting. And look, over 13 weeks they shot the first season's lots of episodes, which is amazing productivity. The series went to air and he became a national celebrity, did Reeves. Even the ABC network, which was struggling by the 1950s, pretty much they were running it, running their whole studio based on how popular The Adventures of Superman was. And it, look, seriously, it's probably iconic even today. It's a bird, it's a plane. I mean, look,
it's
Superman.
Superman, yeah.
That's the origins of that one.
Exactly.
So, yeah, nothing's been like that quite since. However, Andy.
Well, as far as, you know, TV shows other than cartoons, we're talking live-action TV shows. You got The Adventures of Lois and Clark back in the early to mid-90s with Dean Cain and Terry Hatcher.
Yeah.
And that was like a lot more light-hearted view of Superman. And then, of course, Smallville came along in the 90s, which took a different look at Superman. It went back to when he was really young, going through high school
and
developing his powers.
Puberty and all those, adolescence bullying, all those things, which is really an interesting concept and very well character-driven, I think.
It was, and it took the whole 10 seasons for him to actually come to his full powers. You know, at the end of the 10th season, he was like, you know, fully-fledged Superman. So,
it was impressive. Even though I've hardly watched any of that, many, many seasons, and it ran for quite some time, didn't it?
It did, and it's actually still running in the comics. They're into like the end of season 11, just following on in the comics. Yeah,
fantastic.
Which is what happens a lot if TV shows don't, you know, continue on television. They just continue in the comics.
So. They find a new life, a new incarnation.
Absolutely,
one could say.
Exactly.
All right. Well, this is Sci-Fi and Scream, and we've had many incarnations, and now Andy's one of them. Welcome to the space pod, Andy.
Welcome to the Phantom Zone.
Very good. All right. Now we will be discussing a bit of phantoms and a bit of zoning out and zodding and so forth. Up next on Sci-Fi and Scream, when we tackle that big one, the big block of steel itself.
Man of steel, yes.
Yes. This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
This is Scott and Chris. Chris and Scott. And you're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on 94.9.
Are you afraid of the dark? You're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. And of course, yeah, that is the Man of Steel soundtrack with some sound bites in there. Very famous. I believe she is Australian by origin. The composer for that lovely piece of music, that's Lisa Gerrard. And she's worked on many wonderful, composed a lot of wonderful soundtracks, including Whale Rider, amongst other things. And very moving piece of music for The Man of Steel.
Very much.
So here we are. Spoilers, everyone. If you are tuning in now here on Sci-Fi and Scream.
Spoiler alert.
It is spoiler alert. But I guess for most people who know the Superman story, that's not going to spoil it for you.
No, it's not. If you know Superman well, then, you know, you won't,
And it's Andy and I here having a go, a go with possibly considered one of the most highly anticipated, again, and one of the biggest blockbuster films for 2013 would be Man of Steel.
Yep.
Zack Snyder's homage to the man in the red underwear.
That's right.
There is no red underwear in this film.
Not in this one, no.
No, which has caused a bit of a controversy for some, apparently.
But
this is not Superman Returns, not at all.
No, oh no.
Andy, where do you want to start with this film that we saw last night?
Well, I just, you know, went in expecting to be blown away, and I was, and I, you know, was ready to compare it to all the other Superman movies that had come before, as you do with sixth film in a series.
It is
of
the sixth film.
It is the sixth one,
right?
The four, you know, Christopher Reeve ones, and the Brandon Routh, and now the Henry Cavill one.
And of course, this one is a lot like the Superman the movie one.
It's
is
a lot
it not?
Like 1978 Richard Donner directed
the Richard Donner one
Superman, the first one.
Because we're looking at origins.
We are, yeah,
yeah, pretty much.
You get told of how, you know, Kal-El comes to Earth and how Zod's looking for him. And it's very much an homage or remake to the first Man of Steel. But, you know, with a modern twist to it.
Yes. Well, I mean, I think that's the important thing. There is the twist or two, but I'm not a great big Superman follower, particularly for comics, possibly for the films when I was a kid. And VHS, of course, were the babysitter of the era.
Oh,
but
yeah.
for me, I think I'm going to come from an angle that is purely, and I just warn listeners, this is just my perspective. I'm coming from this as a film buff and someone who's passionate about cinema. So quite different from you, Andy.
Very different, but
you're
that's
a fan.
Quite all right. Yes, I'm a massive fan.
Whereas I'm looking at it from another different eye. And, of course, it is from the world of the DC Comics. Mm. And so forgive me if I don't know all the iconoclastic bits and symbols and so forth. But here goes. My Man of Steel. Again, like I said, much anticipated. It is, you know, based on the original story, of course. It is set, I guess, in contemporary times now, in our millennium. Mm-hmm. And it is a massive grand story. It is a grand disappointment for me.
Oh, okay. That's your opinion.
Ding, ding. No, I know, it's just my opinion.
That's all right.
It's even a grand illusion, I think. And when I was looking there, I was looking forward to seeing this. It's the excitement, the buzz as you get at any preview is wonderful. But in this day and age, to be honest, as an update on the retelling of this mythos of the Superman mythology and his birth and how he got to planet Earth. Look, up to that point, I quite got involved and quite enjoyed it, apart from the CGI, which felt like a bit of a George Lucas leftover of sorts from those films we won't mention.
Mm-hmm.
But I was wondering, for popular culture now and our mainstream popular culture, what is, to me, the film made me question the relevance of even having a Superman film. The relevance to our age, and that's the thing that probably will upset a lot of people listening now, is because in this new millennium, in 2013, what is the relevance of a superhero who seems to be driven on protecting a military industrial complex machine, as Noam Chomsky used to call it, the United States? I mean,
yes.
I'm not being anti-American, but I think after all this time, after Occupy, after the streets of bloodshed and protests, after September 11, surely people have questioning why is it you would have a figure, an alien figure, come to planet Earth, keep himself a secret identity, which is a totally different aspect altogether of the character, but then turn around and protect what seems to be the military might of this huge complex nation called the United States. Compared to Batman, the recent Batman, the last of the Christopher Nolans, who by the way is a producer of this film, Man of Steel, that seemed more relevant to me.
It was
more relevant to Occupy, more relevant to the movement of anti-money, anti-establishment. Whereas this sort of falls flat to, like, maybe it does belong to the 20th century.
Well, Superman's kind of like the sunny, optimistic, you know, long-distant cousin of Batman, really. They're light and shade as far as, you know, characters go.
Yeah, interesting.
Why they work so well together, I guess. But
okay, but I'm being mean.
No, you're being.
Why did
you?
Why did you like this film, Man of Steel?
Well, as a gay man, I was a massive fan of Henry Cavill already, who played a gay Duke in The Tudors. So,
oh yeah, great TV series. Yeah,
that was fantastic. And the opening sequence where he's you know, on the tuna boat and he gets to shore and he's got his shirt off and the big burly hairy chest was just I'm just saying, as a gay man, I found that really, really entertaining.
There's nothing wrong with that, of course.
No, there's not. And it was pure escapism for me, as all the Superman, you know, comics and movies that I watch are. So I wasn't, you know, reading too much into it. I was just, you know,
you were enjoying it for. I could see the chair was rocking from you enjoying the action. There was a lot of CGI action. There's a lot of explosions. A lot of it reminded me of the Avengers, of Joss Whedon's Avengers from last year, with a lot of that action. Even in some of the same sort of settings, Metropolis could easily stand in for the New York City Wall Street where they were fighting with the Avengers. But there's a polemic here. It's just a little bit different from what I would wanted to see. I guess I wanted to see more of a plot-driven character formation about his identity crisis, which we saw more of when he was flashbacks to when Snyder flashbacks to him as a kid.
That's right.
I enjoyed those moments a lot more than him later on fighting the evil Zod and his cohorts. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I agree. You know, getting to the depth of who Clark Kent is and and all that sort of thing. But yeah, no, definitely the action scenes were great for entertainment. But
yeah, they were.
It did sort of bring back, you know, Avengers sort of style, and
it did feel and a bit like Batman to the last Christopher Nolan as well. I think a little bit.
That's true, but yeah.
But as far as enjoying the manly superpowers of the super alien and his strength, that was interesting. And I love the way that he went from a hidden person, almost a hobo type of wandering character, to becoming someone that saves the world, you know, saves Lois Lane. Okay, the Lois Lane thing, that did actually irk me a bit with Amy Adams. What did you think?
Oh, well, Margot Kidder will always be Lois Lane for me, but, Amy Adams had a go. And
She was still in heels.
Yeah, I mean, the whole time, even when she was
Metropolis falling. Is a mess. There's the wonderful Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah.
Even a few BSG actors turn up, Tamlo Pinnicott and so forth. So there was a great little cameo characters throughout this whole film from the sci-fi world, particularly from sci-fi TV. So maybe the production was made a bit in Canada, I'm not sure.
Well, it was filmed in Vancouver.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
So they got everybody from Vancouver to star in it.
They did.
Where's Ryan Gosling? No. look, Amy's a fine young actress, but I felt like she never actually had a chance to be the Lois Lane that I wanted to see, a really bristling, strong, powerful female with that intellect and discernment. Mm. And then when they threw that kiss in there towards the end... Yeah, it just didn't really make sense, and it felt like it was just a bit of a homage to the Superman 1978 film.
Yeah.
Like when she falls from the building and is captured.
That's right.
It's like he's always rescuing her, and I don't know. I think she could handle herself adequately.
Well, yeah, that's right. He's always there. So Lois Lane is like Superman's number one priority, which, you know.
Which you get.
One of his weaknesses.
I know. Well, yeah. You know. Look, a great-looking film. Mm. We've got a bit more to chat about this before we do head off. Thanks, Andy, and we'll give it a rating.
Yeah, great.
That'll be fun. Find out what yours is compared to mine.
Okay.
This is Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9.
Hello, I'm John Richards, the co-creator and writer of the best gay and lesbian science fiction-themed comedy you will see all year, Outland, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam.
Joy
94.9.
Sci-Fi and Squeam here on Joy 94.9. Thank you so much for listening. But before we do head off, we have to do the big thing. We have to give this film a rating. Andy, Man of Steel gets what from you?
I'm going to give it 9 out of 10.
We usually go out of 5, but okay, made it interesting for me. No. I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10 in that case.
Okay.
I felt, again, it fell down just as more contemporizing compared to Batman, but hey, you had some relevant points.
Yep.
Does he belong in the mothballs, or do we need a sequel to this film?
Well, speaking of that, another spoiler alert. There's apparently a second Superman film coming up next year. And following year, there'll be a Justice League movie featuring Superman, of course.
But okay.
Yeah, so there's whether or not it's needed, it's going to happen. And
whether we like it or not.
Whether we like it or not, that's right. Yep.
Okay, so you're giving it a...
A 9 out of 10.
A 9 out of 10. Mm-hmm. That's very generous. That's cool. Thank you, Andy Hawken.
It's okay.
From DC Comics. No, not really, but
no,
probably
wish.
The biggest fan ever.
Yes.
And me, I'm giving it a 6 out of 10. This film was directed by Zack Snyder, produced, of course, by Christopher Nolan, Charles Roven, Emma Thomas, good to see a woman in there, and Deborah Snyder, also good to see a woman in there. Screenplay by David S. Goyer, story by Christopher Nolan and David S. Goyer. Mm. It's based on Superman, of course, by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. Stars Henry Cavill, Amy Adams, the wonderful Michael Shannon really hams it up as Zod, and Kevin Costner plays it low-key as the adopted dad with Diane Lane, pretty wonderful. Lawrence Fishburne, not enough of him on the screen.
No.
And Russell Crowe, a little too much of him on the screen. Music by Hans Zimmer. It's out through and distributed by Warner Brothers and Roadshow Australia. It opens everywhere at 143 minutes throughout Australia this Thursday, the 27th. This is Sci-Fi and Squeam. Thank you so much, Andy.
Thank you very much, Sonia.
Thank you for your Superman.
Pleasure.
I'm going to, probe your brain later.
Great.
But not in a Zod sort of way.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Next week, we have got a couple of interviews. We've got Crawl Space, some amazing Aussies that are making a sci-fi horror drama, set in outer space, of course, and Errors of the Human Body, a pre-recorded interview with Erin Sheehan, the director of that amazing little sci-fi thriller. So tune in next week, July the 2nd, with our new grid on Sci-Fi and Squeam. And up next, of course, The Single Life with John and Michelle. Good night, everybody.
Are you prepared for the zombie apocalypse? In case of emergency, break glass and tune in to Joy 94.9 on a Tuesday night for Sci-Fi and Squeam.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.